Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Lieutenant Joe Pangaro for Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm coming to you this afternoon live from the beautiful state of Florida, specifically in Orlando. You know, the fun destination. We got all the theme parks and we got the beautiful hotels and resorts and everything. So the reason I'm down here, besides just enjoying and soaking up the beautiful sunshine and the freedom from COVID down here, is really amazing. Completely different than in the Northeast, is that I'm down here for the NASRO conference. With that is the National Association of School Resource Officers, NASRO. They run a lot of events across the country, and each year they have a specific national convention, as do most large organizations. And the purpose of NASRO is to bring together law enforcement officers from across the country that work in our schools where our children are. Now, right now, as we move through the summer, in a lot of places, we're getting ready to start up school again. You know, in the Northeast, we don't start until after Labor Day. You know, we get done in late June with school. School closes, and then the kids go back after Labor Day. Well, in lots of the parts of the South, the kids get out in May, and then they start up again in late August, right? So it's a little bit different, but they're gearing up in many places, and that's why we come to the NASRO concert, to the conference, because one of the things I do is, as you know, is I try and keep people safe in schools, businesses, religious facilities. That's my mission in life nowadays. So I'm down here to meet with other officers. I'm doing a presentation for the conference. It's on COVID-19 and the return to school. Now, I have spoken about this in the past. I write for a lot of different publications. But one of the things that I saw coming last year, when we thought, you know, we were going to flatten the curve for, you know, 15 minutes or whatever, and then we were going to come back to the world, and that lasted for over, well over a year of the shutdown, and well, everybody knows the brutality of what happened to us. Well, it became clear to me even last year when we shut down in March that we were considering that the kids were going to go back to school probably at some point in May, which would be March, April, and then part of May, shut down for, you know, almost 2 months before they went back to school. And how devastating this might be. My concern was, when we look at young people or even adults who commit violent crimes in their schools or their businesses, you know, active shooters is who we're talking about. When we look at these people, there is no profile of an active shooter. We know that to be the case. But there are a lot of traits that young people and adults both display, that we can identify many of their problems before they attack us. We just don't always connect the dots, as people say. So when we look at active shooters, we find that they are usually disconnected from their school. They don't feel part of the bigger school community. They're not connected to the school. They're not connected to friends. They're isolated, right? Same thing for adults. They feel isolated at the workplace. They don't feel cared for. They don't feel that people are concerned about them. So what we find now as we go forward here, at least I did last year, was that disconnection was going to be compounded by the separation from school and from friends and from any type of you know, connection to other people. And I anticipated that if school opened up again last May or June, you might find some people, some young people who would have normally been under the radar, people we would not have had seen do anything violent, they might appear now and be violent because of the PTSD from the lockdown, the disconnection, the disassociation with their lives and their friends. And that was that article was published in a couple of the big school security magazines and got a lot of feedback, and we did a couple of programs on it. So that was my concern then. You can imagine my concern now as we move a year later and schools are opening. Schools are open in the Northeast. And they're open in most places in the country now. But it's the end of the school year. It's over. And now we're anticipating the big startup come, you know, late August or September, right? Now, we're starting to see I don't want to say threats, but we're starting to see a concern that because of the different variants of the virus that are out there, that there could be more lockdowns. We could have to shut down. There could be a spike. There could be all kinds of things as the fall rolls around, that maybe we have to go back to some more restrictions on people. Well, I got to tell you, that is part of what the PTSD is, on top of the actual lockdowns, the actual separation from everyone, this constant drumbeat of fear. Now, no doubt, COVID is a dangerous virus. All right, let's be clear on that. So all you people in your basements in your underwear taking notes on Lieutenant Joe, and yes, I know you're out there. Yes, COVID is a dangerous virus. Yes, people can die from it. Absolutely. But the reality is that young people, by and large, do not die from it. They get it. It passes through their system. They deal with it, and then they're fine. And then they have an immunity when they come out the other side of it. So locking down the schools is really not a necessity. And we're finding that this separation from everybody is really part of what the problem is. Now, when we look at our workplaces as adults, the same kind of factors are in place there. We have adults who are separated from each other. We have people who maybe the lockdown has caused them lots of problems. Maybe they've lost their job. Maybe their employer had to lay them off, or maybe they didn't get the unemployment that was enough to help them, or whatever the problem was. And you're going to see people who might not have been on our radar before for violence. Now, as we come out of this, you might see them become more violent, and you might see some more danger in the workplace. So my point is, we have to be aware of this and prepare for the possibility. So I'm down here at NASRO in beautiful Florida, and the conference is going pretty well. I'm going to give this presentation on COVID-19 and the return to school, and hopefully add some insights to the men and women of law enforcement who are down here, who work in our schools all the time, who do the right thing in our schools every day to try and keep our kids safe, and our staff and our teachers and everybody who works in the schools. When it comes to that, I have to tell you, if I'm looking around Florida, you know, in the Northeast, or where I hail from, in Jersey, the lockdowns have pretty much ended. You know, we've seen in recent times the governors of New York and New Jersey removing capacity restrictions, and people, you know, restaurants can get together and you can go different places, and there's concerts, and you know, some of the concerts are limited. But we do see it was slower there than it is in Florida. Florida's been wide open for pretty much the entire year. I've heard about it. I have family and friends who live down here, and I would talk to them, and they're sending pictures. They're all going out to the bars. They're going to clubs. They're going to concerts. And the COVID rate has remained extremely low down here. So there's a lot of factors to that. I'm not a virologist, but I can imagine that the warm weather, maybe just the peaking, maybe the vaccination has helped. You know, that's another thing. I'm not going to say the vaccination hasn't helped. It's just the reality that the vaccines are experimental, and forcing people to take them is part of the problem. So I'm down here in Florida, and I come to Orlando. And the first thing I wanted to say is I take my trip. I'm going to fly down here from New Jersey. And I had to fly into Atlanta, and then from Atlanta down into Orlando. Well, the airlines and the airports all have a rule, I guess it's a federal rule, that the entire time you're in the airport, you have to wear the mask. And depending on your airline, I suppose, the one I was on, I don't want to say what it was, but it was very good. I really liked the airline. You have to wear your mask the whole time. All right, so I put on a mask for the first time in a long time because, like I said, New Jersey, they've kind of removed the mask. It's not mandatory anymore. It's, you know, it's up to you. If you want to wear a mask, which is fine. It's what it should have been all along. But anyway, I get on the airplane, and I'm wearing this thing now. Well, I was in the airport, you can imagine, 3 hours before my flight to make sure I was there on time. I went through security, did everything I had to do there. Then I get on the airplane, and we fly to Atlanta. Well, I had to leave it on in Atlanta. Then I get off Well, I got to tell you, long and short of it, by the time I got into my ride from the airport in Orlando to my hotel, it was 2 o'clock. I left my house at 2:30 in the morning so I could make the 6 o'clock flight. I've been wearing the mask for all of about 10 hours. I got to tell you, it was tough to breathe, especially in the hot air. You know, you're rebreathing and rebreathing. And of course, I'm saying, you know, I guess I'm feeling all right. You're sitting most of the time, right? You're sitting on an airplane, you know, trying to take a nap. But how uncomfortable this mask was. But then I get down here. I get out of the airport. I step outside. As soon as I step outside of the airport, I look around. There's not a mask to be seen anywhere. Nobody. The police down here, the airport workers that are outside of the building, outside of the terminal, cab drivers, you know, all the people that are down here, everybody's got the mask off. I peel that mask off. It felt wonderful. But I can tell you, you know, my lips were all wet and sweaty. 10 hours with that stupid thing on. Now, in the airplane, when they bring you your snacks and stuff, you're allowed to take your mask off so you can eat your snacks and drink your drink or whatever. So I had a cup of coffee and some peanuts, but I had the mask off for like 15, 20 minutes while I was eating my peanuts. And I look around, everybody else is eating peanuts. And so we all got our masks off. So you know how an air circulates in an airplane. You got to be kidding me, right? Or are we doing this because it's really making a difference, or are we still doing it for, I guess, the comfort of those who are scared to death? I don't know. I have no idea. But here I come down here, and now, you know, my first day, I have a day before the conference starts, which was great. I got down here a little bit early. Sun was shining. It was blasting. It was 90 degrees. The hotel was very nice. I get to the hotel, and I said, you know what? I have time. I'm going to go for a swim, right? Well, talk about meeting people and just seeing nice people. And this is, you know, we could talk about a lot of things here. We get upset, you know, about the politics. And believe me, we're going to cover all of that today. There's a lot going on out there. But my experience at this hotel was really wonderful. So I go out to the pool. And it's not a giant pool. It's a, you know, small pool. But it's nice out. Very warm, sunshiny. And I go out there, and there was some people in the pool already. There was a woman, I guess she was in her 60s, her two daughters, and her son-in-law. And they were all from Mississippi. And they were on vacation. They had come to Orlando. They rented a house for 2 weeks. Unfortunately, the mom, her husband, got sick while he was down here, not with COVID. He had some other kind of heart issue, and he had to go in the hospital, and they can't move him for about another 2 weeks. So these ladies and their son-in-law are staying at the hotel I'm at. So I go to jump in the pool, and first of all, we had such a wonderful conversation. Just talking to people from around the country and what it's like. And they were asking me, where are you from? What are you doing here? You know, they told me their story. Really a wonderful family. And what's good about this story, what I liked so much about this story, is that with all the racial tension that's going on in our country now, and everybody's at each other's throats, and you know, we're so consumed with critical race theory and Black Lives Matter and who cares about who, this family that was in the pool was an African American family from Mississippi. And we laughed and joked and had such a good time together. We were just a bunch of people in the pool in Florida. You know, there was no racial anything to our conversation. It was really, really wonderful. And the young man, the son-in-law, was a music teacher in high school. So, of course, we start talking and they're asking me what I do. And I, you know, I keep kids safe. I train people and this and that. And he's a music teacher. They started talking about what they're doing in their schools, what they're not doing in their schools to help kids be safe. And it was just a wonderful conversation. I can't say that enough, how much I was enjoying myself just sitting there in the pool talking to these wonderful people. Well, at some point, I forget what the... Oh, I know. When the mom had told me about her husband in the hospital, I had just said, you know, hey, listen, I'll say a prayer for him, because what a terrible thing to go to vacation, end up in a hospital, right? And she thanked me so much. And then she started singing a gospel hymn. And her voice was beautiful. Now, here we are in the pool. And she starts singing this gospel hymn. Well, I couldn't believe it, but her two daughters joined in and started harmonizing with her. And then I guess her son-in-law, he jumped in and started singing. It was the most beautiful thing I had heard. I don't even know what song it was, but the sound of their voices was absolutely amazing. And they sang this whole song, and I was just like in shock. I said, that was beautiful. I said, do you sing all the time? We sing in church all the time. So it was just a really, really wonderful experience. And it's nice to have those once in a while, isn't it? Right? Not to have a problem, but to have nice things go on. And I'm saying to myself, why can't everybody just get along like this? Right? We're all just people. We're all just people in a pool, right? We're not black people and white people in a pool. We're just people. We're Americans in a pool. And I was really surprised in our conversation as we really went around the world, because you're just sitting there in the pool and it's we're trying to stay cool, that our conversation went around and around and how pro-American they were and how pro-American I am and how much they liked Donald Trump, right? You don't hear that. You don't hear that in the mainstream media, that our African-American brothers and sisters, how much they like President Trump. They loved President Trump. They thought he did a lot of really good things. They thought that, you know, the country was in good shape when he was the president. And yeah, they didn't like his tweeting. But what they said is, we just ignored the stupid stuff. And he made the country better and stronger and safer. You know, they were very pro-military. It was great. It was just a really a great conversation. And, you know, at some point after a little while, I was tired from all my travels. I said, listen, I'm going to go get lunch. It was very nice to meet everybody. And it was friendly. It was a friendly goodbye. I left and I went and got some lunch, which was interesting because the hotel I'm at is a little isolated from places where you can get food to eat. And, of course, I didn't have a rental car immediately. I have to, you know, do those, you know, the Uber Lyft kind of thing to get around down here. So I decided I'm going to take a little walk. Hey, I'm going to take a walk. So I asked the man at the front desk, hey, where's their place I can get food? And he goes, oh, well, you know, across the highway over there. You can go over there and eat over there. So I'm going to take a nice walk. Well, along the driveway of the hotel going out to the major highway that I had to cross, that's a whole nother story. There's placards like every 50 feet along this wooded area with a look like a swamp or a creek or something. And as I'm walking along, I read the signs, and this is a wildlife conservation area. And they're saying, you know, this is preserved land. This is pristine land, of which, of course, Lieutenant Joe just loves that. The other thing that people will know that know me is when I'm in Florida, I love those little lizards, the anoles, you know, that are all over the bushes and the grass. And I just think they're amazing, adorable, cute, and I like to, you know, catch them and look at them. And it's all I've always done it since I've been coming to Florida as a kid. Everybody in my family knows, you know, when I get here and I have free time, I'm going to go looking for those little anoles because they're amazing. So anyway, of course, I see this wild preserve area. And I'm taking a look, and it's just beautiful. The water was crystal clear. The trees, everything was beautiful in this conservation area. Well, let me remind everyone out there, if you haven't been to Florida, everything in Florida will bite you, sting you, attack you, snap at you. You got to be very careful when you go. See, I'm used to the Northeast, where there's really nothing there that's going to get you. In the Northeast, there's, you know, what's in the water? Bodies. Bodies are in the water in the Northeast. Down here in Florida, there's alligators, there's snakes, there's ants that will crawl up your leg and chew your kneecap off. So here I am, you know, looking into the woods here, and all of a sudden there's a huge splash, not 3-4 feet from me, and I'm going to assume it was an alligator. It snapped and took off under the water, so I don't know what it was. Either that or a massively gigantic bullfrog, I don't know. But it made this huge snap sound, and then a splash, and it was gone. And I was like, okay, Lieutenant Joe, back up from the wildlife conservation area and stay on the road, okay? Now, that's pretty funny because that's just adding to the flavor of my story, right? Now, I get up to the highway. Right? So you're with me on this journey, right, to get something to eat, right? It's been a long day. I get to this highway, and it's a six-lane highway, three in each direction, and I have to cross over it to get to the places where the food are. I'm an adventurous kind of guy, not a problem. So I wait. The one side gets totally clear. I go across the lane. I'm walking across the median. The other side clears. Go right across. But as I'm walking across the median, my experience with the conservation area immediately comes to my mind. And I'm saying, gee, I wonder if there's anything in here that's going to get me, a scorpion or some kind of snake or something. So you got to really watch where you're walking, because Florida is alive in more ways than one. Not only are the people alive, but the land itself is alive, alive, alive. Well, I got my lunch, which was very nice. And I go back the same route, across the treacherous highway. So here was like an adventurer, a Florida adventurer, going across the highway there. Back to the conservation area, where I made sure I stayed out of the woods this time and got back to my hotel. So that's my little bit of an adventure. The other insight I would have here to seeing Orlando, because Orlando is in the middle of the state, right? Orlando is not on the coasts. And when I was talking to my wife Kathleen, we were talking about, you know, maybe get a condo down here or move to Florida. I don't know. It's a conversation that's ongoing in our home, trying to figure out how we're going to live out our, hopefully the next 30 years of our life. But we wouldn't want to be anywhere not on the coast, because why would you come to Florida if you didn't go to the ocean, right? Well, I got to tell you, this Orlando area is beautiful. It's clean as, I can't believe how clean the place is. Like everywhere, the highways, the little towns, the communities. I went to a place called Icon Park. So if you ever come down here and you're taking the kids to the big theme parks that are down here, and you want something to do for the adults, I guess the kids too, a day other than going into the theme parks, Icon Park is, I guess it's about 5 blocks, and it looks like it's closed off. It's a closed off walkway, and you go through there. There's bars, there's restaurants, there's places for the kids to do fun stuff. It was really, really cool, and I came across one place. What was it called? The Red Tin Inn, or the Old Tin Inn, something or other. But they had music in there. The music was absolutely amazing. I mean, country music. There was a two-man band with a music synthesizer playing, you know, the drums in the background. And the lead singer guy's name was Joe Bachman. And Joe Bachman, unbelievable guy. I'm going to say he's probably mid-30s. And he was with his partner, Zach, who played guitar. And these guys were pounding out these tunes. First of all, they did modern country music that was absolutely amazing. They sounded, the guy's voice is just spot on, man. This guy, he hit every note. Then they would go from that to doing a Billy Joel song, and everybody was singing along. Then he'd go from that, and he would do some other genre. But these guys just rocked this place. Two guys with, you know, one guitar, and a guy's voice was amazing. Well, at the end of the show, I'm sitting there having my cocktail and something to eat, and the singer's coming around saying hi to everybody. He's got Joe Bachman's going around table to table, thanking everybody for coming out. I mean, really a smart business move on his part. But he comes around, and when he gets to me, we start talking. He had mentioned, I got to go back a minute. As he's ending his show, he did a big shout out to law enforcement, to the fire personnel, to military. And he talked about how much he loved the military, and they did a final song that was really a salute to the military. Well, the whole bar, the whole place was cheering and screaming in a positive way for law enforcement, military people. It was so refreshing to see that attitude, especially with what we got going on now with all this defund the police and hate the police and police are bad and all that nonsense that's going on. And it was great. So when he came around to the table I was sitting at, he says, "Hey, hope you like the show." He had mentioned that his brother was a law enforcement officer from New Jersey. So I said, "Hey, yeah, you know, I'm law enforcement myself. And, where's your brother work?" And he tells me, and we start talking. Turns out that his brother and his dad were both law enforcement, right? Unfortunately, they were both deceased. And we didn't go into the details of what happened, but how proud he was of his brother and his father and law enforcement, and just such a great guy. We're going to get him on the show here. We made a contact. He was asking what I do for law enforcement. You know, once you connect with somebody else, a law enforcement family, there's usually a connection that you can make that's pretty easy. Because you know what? You understand each other's life. You understand that lifestyle. You understand that feeling of, hey, when somebody goes out the door, you hope they come back. That kind of thing. So we made a really good connection. We exchanged numbers, and he agreed to come on the show. So I'll see if I can get a picture of him, him and I, and I'll put it up on the website if I can get the great Malcolm Out Loud to throw it up there. But if not, I'm going to have Joe Bachman on, and he's going to talk about his family and his music and why he likes America so much, why he's so traditionally pro-American. But that's what I found down here in Florida. It is, it's America. You know, it's America down here. I'm sure, you know, there's cities and places that don't care so much for the police and they're upset and they're on the bandwagon. But for the most part, Florida is still a red state. And everybody, I'm saying everybody that was in this bar, there was every kind of person, every kind of race of people in this bar. And again, we were all just having fun singing the songs. This guy was amazing. He did country music. He did rock and roll. He did some rap songs. And everybody in the bar was just having a good time, shouting, screaming, clapping their hands, getting along as one American family. It was refreshing. You know, you don't see that up in the Northeast. There's such animosity going on when you watch the news every day. Ugh. So that's one of the things I'm getting tired of, is watching the news. Because, you know, where are you going to find real news? But am I diverting? Am I going to another tangent about the media? Well, I'm not going to do that. So here's what we're going to try and do. There's lots and lots of people at the convention. And right now I'm in a very quiet area where I can talk to you. When I get back out on the floor, I'm going to kind of see what goes on and if I can interview anybody. So I'm going to see if I can do a couple of interviews with people. Some of the vendors that are there that make equipment, and I have no interest in any of their equipment, all right? Just some of the things I find really important, so that when I talk about safety and security, whether it's your business or your school or your religious facility, there's certain equipment that we need to understand about. And as I walk around, I see, you know, all these vendors, they got all this different stuff, and I evaluate it. And if I find somebody that has something I think is pretty good, maybe I'll do a little interview with them and talk to them. I do want to do a shout out to a couple of people. The DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration, they have a booth at this event, because obviously DEA is law enforcement and this is a law enforcement event. But as I'm walking by, I hear, "Hey, Lieutenant Joe," and I turn around and I look, and there's a young lady named Joanne Anderko, and she works for the DEA. Now, I had met Joanne, I don't know, a year ago, 2 years ago. I'm on the board of the New Jersey Narcotics Enforcement Officers Association. I'm one of the board members, and one of our members there, a nice man named Nitin, he is a former DEA and New Jersey law enforcement officer, and he called me up and said, "Hey, the DEA is doing this amazing program for schools. It's called Handle with Care," right? And they're looking for some training. They're looking for some de-escalation training for the Newark schools in New Jersey for their security officers, right? They got like 300 security officers in the Newark schools. And they're looking for somebody to tell them about Handle with Care and to do some de-escalation and some trauma-informed response, right? So trauma-informed response is understanding what young kids or people might go through when they're involved in traumatic incidents. Someone gets killed, there's a shooting, maybe there's a violence in the home, or they're involved with the police in somehow. And, you know, it's a program that basically the law enforcement officer fills out a form and sends it to the school if there's a child at the location where this situation took place, so that the school principal then can assign someone to identify this child and then take a look and make sure the child is okay, that the trauma that the child went through isn't having a negative effect on the kid. So it's really a great program. They don't really give a lot of details to the school about what happened. They just say this child was involved with law enforcement in some way, and you need to just pay attention, make sure the kid's okay. Well, of all the programs that are out there, I find this to be a really great program, Handle with Care, and they want it to go nationwide. So currently, New Jersey's pretty big for Handle with Care. It's growing all over the state. We have, I think it's Indiana, it's big, West Virginia, one of the Carolinas is in it, and they're pushing it out across the United States, Handle with Care. So if you're a school person and, you know, you're listening to hear me talk about it, reach out to your local DEA office and tell them you're interested in having Handle with Care come to your school, because it's a great, great program. You know, I know there's people that are in charge of creating programs, and all day long they just make up programs, and some of them are horrible. But this is a really good program, Handle with Care through the DEA. So I guess the DEA funds it for districts where there could be a lot of violence, violence in the community, could be narcotics in the community. So that's where they're starting. But it's going to go all the way across the country, because trauma knows no boundaries, right? So this Joanne Anderko young lady, she hooks me up through Nitin, my friend from the association. And We had corresponded a few times. Well, she got moved to the D.C. area in the DEA. And all of a sudden, here I am at this function, and here she is. So her and I had a really long talk about the Handle With Care program and how it's expanding. And I was really happy and proud to be a part of it to help, kids. Because that's what I'm all about now, helping keep kids safe. And whether that's safe mentally or safe physically, that's part of what we do in my company. So back in a minute, after we hear from some important sponsors.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Well, there was a time when Americans could rely on the Fourth Estate. Well, in these challenging times, the media is both reckless and complicit. AmericaOutloud.com. Top analysis from leading experts, articles, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Everybody, welcome back to Chasing Justice with your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. So let's talk a little bit about politics. Now, politics can make you sick, right? We think about what's going on now. The politics of America right now is toxic. People are at each other's throats over politics. We see the recounts of the elections going on. We're finding out there was more fraud than people told us. Entire ballots are being, tossed out. I don't know that's going to change anything. I mean, even if they found out that Trump actually did win several of the states that they gave to Biden, there is no mechanism to say, well, it turns out this guy actually won and he should have been the president. There's no mechanism in our Constitution for that. I guess nobody expected there to be these kind of problems. I figured you would go to the voting booth, you would vote, and then they would count up the votes, and that would be that. They didn't expect all of this craziness that we have today with the, voting 3 months early, voting by pencil, voting with the crayon, voting, without any ID, voting, twice, voting 17 times, Who knows? Our founding fathers didn't anticipate the modern world that we have today with all the corruption that's going on. But the reality is, whatever is going to happen is going to happen. Do you know how you can help keep yourself from being sick? Well, I'm going to tell you. Healthy Cell, right, is vitamin supplements. It's an amazing immune boost is the one that I've been taking, and I've talked about it a couple of times. Healthy Cell Immune Boost. It's like a gel in a little, like a plastic tubing. And you can mix it with water. You can put it on stuff. I take it right out of the tube because it's a blackberry flavored. I think it tastes really good. And I have been feeling amazing, right? I was a little concerned coming down to Florida. What if I had a problem? What if I didn't feel good? Got on the airplane. Eesh. I'm telling you, I've been taking this stuff for a month now, and I feel really, really good. It's an excellent supplement. So if you're looking for something to pump up your immune system as we continue to fight off the COVID villain that's out there, I'm going to suggest take a look at the Healthy Cell and give it a try. They advertise on the station here on America Out Loud, and it's a great product. I would not tell you that if I didn't really think it. I've found it to be very helpful to me, and I do feel better. And I just wanted you to know that because politics will make you sick. Healthy Cell can keep you healthy, right? So give it a try. We haven't talked about Cuba or Cuba in quite a long time. You know, there was the big push, I guess, under President Obama to open up travel and invite them back into the world, even though their communist regime under the Castro brothers hadn't really changed in any way, shape, or form. They hadn't given in anything. The sanctions had been on them for years and years and years, hadn't really forced them into any big changes in the political system or the way they treated their people. Now, we also heard the nonsense that, you know, from our friends on the left, that the Cuban healthcare system is fabulous and it's one of the best in the world. Well, then why do the Cuban leaders come to America when they need healthcare? Why don't they use their own excellent, fabulous healthcare, right? Well, we all knew that that's really just a propaganda push from the left because, you know, the left is enamored with socialism and with Marxism and communism. And they loved the Cubans. The fact that they wiped out thousands of their people, that they disappear people, that you know, if you speak against the regime, you'll be taken away. Even that doesn't matter. It's fantastic that everyone is treated the same, and it's right. It's all nonsense. We know that. But they tried to open up the relationship with Cuba, and you could go there, you could visit, and some people did. And then President Trump shut it back down again because there was no big time change in the government. The leaders, like in all communist socialist nations, they live a great life. They have the benefits of everything, the best of food, the best of housing, best of whatever health care they have in their country, or the ability to come to America to get the health care. But the people do not have that. The people get the scraps that are left over. That's just how it works in every one of those situations. But recently we're seeing some rioting going on in Cuba. And it's funny how it's being portrayed. What we can see is that people are taking to the streets demanding changes in their government. There was just thousands of people protesting out in the streets demanding freedom. You know, they're willing to go in the streets and they're standing in front of the communist building, the headquarters, and they're saying, "We are not afraid. We are not afraid." Now, the leader, which is not one of the Castro brothers, I don't remember this guy's name, and I really should know it, so I apologize. The leader of the Communist Party now, he gets to the radio and a Twitter, and he starts telling the people of Cuba that, hey, revolutionaries, take to the streets and fight. Fight these people that are protesting against, you know, the beloved, you know, motherland we have here in our communist paradise. Go out and fight these people in the streets. They're calling for a battle, which is interesting. People have been arrested, have been taken away, and it's a boiling keg right now. Now, Senator Ted Cruz, who is his family is Cuban immigrants, he took to Twitter and made some statements where he's, you know, we support fully the people who are seeking freedom in Cuba. We seek freedom for people all around. The Biden administration made a statement to the effect that, you know, people should be allowed to express themselves. They should peacefully protest, although we understand what our friends on the left think a peaceful protest is. Usually involves burning buildings, looting places, and attacking law enforcement. But other than that, it's very peaceful. But they're coming out supporting peaceful protesters and urging the government to, you know, leave these peaceful protesters alone. Well, I don't know where that's going to go. The reality here is we know how these regimes react when you push too far. There's going to be a point where they're either going to have to acquiesce and change, which is highly unlikely, or you're going to see them respond in a brutal fashion to put down the insurrection. Is it an insurrection? Gee, is that what an insurrection really looks like? People taken to the streets because they're demanding a change in their government. They're demanding fairness. They're demanding openness. And what's the government going to do? Mow them down, right? Insurrection. Isn't that what they called the bunch of people at the Capitol when they stormed the Capitol? Was that an insurrection? Were those people really trying to take over the government of the United States? No, I don't think so. They were protesters that got out of hand. They went into a building they shouldn't have gone into. That young lady got shot and killed which we still don't know all the facts around that. But that wasn't an insurrection. You know, this wasn't an armed insurrection trying to take over the building. Matter of fact, none of those people had weapons. The only weapons that were there were the Capitol Police, and an officer there used his weapon and killed a young lady who was admittedly breaking into the building, coming through, trespassing, no doubt about it. But in America, we don't shoot and kill trespassers unless they're coming into our homes to do violence. In a public square like that, that was not the appropriate response, in my opinion. But anyway, I'm diverging. What's going on in Cuba is going to be interesting to see how it's going to play out. What I find even more interesting is how the Biden administration is framing this. They're not framing it as the people of Cuba are rising up for their freedom and for their liberty. They are saying the people are rising up because of COVID-19 and the healthcare. Now, wait a minute. Don't our friends on the left tell us they have the greatest healthcare in the world in Cuba? That the communist government provides the greatest healthcare that everyone can get in Cuba? Isn't that what they tell us? Well, then why would the people in Cuba be rising up against their healthcare if it's so fantastic? Now, obviously, the people are taking this moment, and I'm sure COVID has pushed this along, you know, the lockdowns and people are dying and are sick, and they're demanding more freedom. This is one of those things that they can dovetail. You have one incident leads to another. They're not out there protesting and being upset over COVID. COVID is not the main thing. It's freedom that they want. But the Biden administration is portraying it as they're only upset about COVID. They love their life being under a communist regime. It's so wonderful there. So it's the COVID that they're upset about, and that's why people are in the streets. And we know that that's not really true. So I want to say a prayer for the people of Cuba, that they find their freedom and liberty, that the government there has a turn of heart and decides to do what's right by their people. It would be great to welcome the entire Cuban nation back into the family of freedom, right? That would be really, really wonderful, because the people who have immigrated here, the Cuban people who have come here, are amazing, wonderful, hardworking people that have added a lot to our country. And, you know, it would be great to see a great relationship with Cuba and freedom and liberty and a better lifestyle for all the people there. So keep that in mind. Keep that on your radar. Let's pay attention and see where things go here. CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference that was just held in Dallas. Interesting. You know, is Trump out for 2024? Has his time come and gone? You know, for a while there, it started to look like maybe he's had enough, that he wants to be a political figure out there. But what a burden this man and his family had to deal with, the way they were treated by the press, and just horrific. No president ever has been treated as poorly as Donald Trump. You can disagree with his policies, but the way this guy was treated, the way he was, the government power was used against him. He was spied on. Yeah, he was spied on. Which is inappropriate completely. We did see attacks on him that were unprecedented for any American president, just because the people in power didn't like a disruptor like him coming in. And it was on both sides of the aisle. They didn't like Trump. You got the never Trumpers who would not support their president. You know, as conservatives, we prayed for years that somebody would come along and actually do conservative things, that somebody would say they're going to do something and then actually do it, not just say it and then limp along that they can't do it, can't find a way to do it, don't have enough support to do it, really would like to do it, but when they get a chance to do it, they don't do it. You know, this is weak. This is weak Republicans that we have out there. So we were praying for somebody strong to come along. Now here's Trump, a business guy, comes in, sees a problem, and says, okay, here's how we fix the problem. Let's fix the problem. Right? Amazing. Energy independence. You know, remember not too long ago when gas was like $2 a gallon, $1.95, $2 a gallon? What are you paying for gasoline now? In most places, it's $3 or more a gallon. Well, that makes a big difference in people's pockets. You know, I bought a nice pickup truck because I'm always needing a pickup truck. So I traded in my car and bought a nice pickup truck. Well, I got to tell you, it's got a 25-gallon tank. Well, at a dollar extra a gallon, that's another $25 a couple times a week. That adds up. That's a lot of money. That is a tax on people. So it doesn't matter if you're driving a little car, you're paying a dollar a gallon more. And that comes out of people's budgets. That comes out of their food money. That comes out of their insurance money, no matter how much you're making. So this is part of the problem, you know, that we saw with the change from the Trump administration to the Biden administration and much more socialist type of policies. Well, at CPAC, Donald Trump was a speaker there, and he spoke for about 90 minutes, and he talked about the Biden administration. He talked about the country, the gas prices, a rousing speech, a Donald Trump speech. And you say to yourself, is he going to run again, or is he going to choose a candidate and really support him? Well, one of the rising stars of the Republican Party is this Florida governor, Ron DeSantis. This guy seems rock solid. We see what he's doing in Florida, how he led Florida through the COVID crisis, and Florida is doing fantastic. We see that he seems to be very conservative in how he does things, how he actually governs. He says he's going to do something, and then he does it. That is, I think that's what we all want, right? Isn't that what we want somebody to say they're going to do something and then actually do it? So I really like this Ron DeSantis. And they had the straw poll at the CPAC of who the people there, which are conservative people, you know, who would they want to see as their candidate for 2024 for president? And amazing, Donald Trump won overwhelmingly with 71% of the vote. 71% of the conservatives at the CPAC convention voted that they want Donald Trump to run again, right? And Governor DeSantis, he got 21%. So there was a lot of talk for a while that maybe Trump's time had come and gone. He did what he did, but maybe it was time to pass the baton, and Governor DeSantis was the rising star. He would be the guy that everybody would say, you know what? They beat Trump up so bad, it would be such a hard mission to have Trump come back again, even though everybody liked what he did. Even if you didn't vote for him, you had to like how the country was running, I would think. If you have a brain cell in your head working, you know, everything was going pretty well. You might not like what he says or you may his tweets, but the country was running pretty well under Trump. But anyway, so it looked like, you know, Governor DeSantis was going to be the rising star, and he would get the 71%, and everybody would say, okay, maybe Trump will make a big endorsement, and here we go with DeSantis. The fact that at CPAC, 71% of the vote came in for Trump and 21% for DeSantis, the other 19 candidates alone garnered like 1% here and there, right? That's just about all there was. So there's 70, 80, 90, 92. So the like 8% of the vote that was left over went to other 19 candidates, most of them getting like 1%, 0.5%, whatever. Clearly, Trump and DeSantis are the favorites of the conservative world. Now, I don't know what you think about them. Maybe you don't like them. Either one, maybe you wouldn't support them if you're on the Republican side. I'm not sure. I think Trump did a great job. If he wants to run, I would support him. You know, if DeSantis wants to run, I would support him. I think they're both smart leaders. I think they both did a great job when the opportunity that they had. But I'm just watching the results. I'm not watching the tweets. I'm not watching what the media says. I'm watching the results of each man's work. And they both seem to be successful at what they do. And that's what our country needs, success. We don't need this rising socialism. I'm sorry. You know, it's almost like the way things have changed in America. If you're not going along with this socialist ride, then there's something wrong with you. Something wrong. Don't you see it's so much better? And it's not so much better. It portends big, big problems for our nation. So in a previous episode, I posited the question, has America already changed? Right? Has America already changed? Are we already living in the new America where we are not there 100%, but we are socialized now? We see our country split 50-50, and it could go either way on any day. We see our young people in large numbers saying socialism was so much better than this capitalist horror where people have to, you know, work and some people don't get ahead and some people aren't millionaires. But where in socialism, everyone would have everything. There'd be free college. There'd be free money for everyone. Everyone will have a beautiful home on the beach. It'll be so fantastic. Why wouldn't we all just, and we'd all get along and everyone would be equal. It'd be so beautiful. Unfortunately, they don't understand how the real world works. All of that is very idealistic, and it would be wonderful. But socialism, communism, is not going to bring you the world you think it's going to bring you. It's going to bring you a horrific experience as history. And open eyeballs will tell anybody who looks around at history and sees where that has led anybody who's chosen those particular forms of government. So we have this CPAC group, and I guess they're supposed to be representative of the feeling of conservatives across the country. So Trump gets 71% and DeSantis. Now, does Trump decide, hey, listen, I'll run for president and I'll bring DeSantis on as my vice president, right? And what would happen to Mike Pence then? Hey, Mike, thanks for your service. He seemed like a very good vice president. I liked him a lot. I liked everything about the guy. I didn't like at the end. Now, I didn't know if he should have supported everything that Trump said, President Trump said about the election, and he wanted him to, as the leader of the Senate, to do certain things to with the election results. And Mike Pence wouldn't do it. He didn't feel it was in his power. He didn't feel it was in the purview of his office to do the things that President Trump was pushing him to do as far as the election was concerned, right? So he seemed, at the last moment, a little weak there. Would DeSantis do that? Well, let me ask the question a different way. Had it been the other way around, had we had President Hillary and Vice President Kaine, and it came down to whether or not to say things, do things, use the power of your office, right, wrong, or indifferent, to win, do you think that they would not have done that? Do you think that the vice president on the Democrat side would not have stood up and used power that he had or didn't have to sway the election, to win, to declare? Of course they would. Our friends on the left don't worry about things like the Constitution and law and what's right or wrong. They do what they need to do to win, right? And our Republican friends, they sit here and say, well, we follow the Constitution. We always do the right thing, even if it means giving up and stepping aside. And that's the thing. Are we at that point now where it's all out fight for what's right to save our country, to return our country to traditional America? Is that where we're at? And that's why I asked that question in a previous episode, was, is America already there? Are we already in this new world where this battle is not going to be won by one election? Because we saw what happened. Trump got elected, and the whole country got embroiled in this anti-Trump derangement syndrome. The media went crazy. They didn't care about rules anymore. They were blatantly biased. They still are. We have no place that will tell you the truth. You know, we're in a real strange place in our country, in our time. And as I analyze it, I'm looking at it going, because we're thinking we're approaching this big change, right? We're getting closer and closer, inch by inch, to this new world of America that could change and be different. And I said, well, wait a minute. Maybe part of the problem is that we're already there. Maybe we are already at this new place. You know, when we see the problems with our election, when we see the problems down in Georgia, where how come our media hasn't taken the new Georgia law that they say is so Jim Crow and so anti-minority and is trying to prevent people from voting? Why haven't they taken that and laid out every single point of that in a big expose and compare it to, I don't know, say Delaware's voting laws, which are much more restrictive than the new laws in Georgia? Why don't they lay them out point by point and really make a case one way or the other? Well, because that wouldn't fit the narrative that they want to say, you know, anytime you want to tighten up the elections so that cheating is removed, well, that's really there to prevent people from voting. I don't know how it prevents anybody from voting. Who was I watching? Trey Gowdy, right? Former Senate, former congressman. Now he's got a TV show. And he makes some really good points. Think about this. I just flew on an airplane. How many times did I have to show ID? Right? Multiple times I had to show ID to be able to get where I was going. How many times do you in life have to show ID? If you go to visit one of our senators or our political people, you're going to show ID before you get in there. Right? If you're going to get government benefits, don't you have to show ID to prove who you are? So this argument that it's racist to demand that people get a government ID and show ID is really, I think it's a game. I think it's some kind of a game because it's not true. You show ID for everything else in life, but not for voting. For voting, it has to be whoever shows up can vote. They can vote in 17 different places. You can mail it in. Why would you want and allow such chaos? What value could there be to allowing such chaos in an election other than to foster the possibility of cheating? If that's the idea, to foster the possibility of cheating, then that would make perfect sense. That's exactly what I would do. I'd want people to vote months ahead. I'd want them to mail it in. I want them to have no ID required. Just sign the ballot and put it in the box so that, I could fake it up any way I want to, right? That seems obvious to me. Does it seem obvious to you that that's the purpose of all of this nonsense around it? The idea of voting is to make sure we have integrity. I don't care who wins. Like, I have a stake. I care who wins. I want my candidates to win. But in general, in America, I just want it to be a fair election. If my point of view does not win, well, then I have to make a better case so that people will vote for what I think is right. But I don't want my election to be destroyed by cheating because one side figured out how to cheat and the other side wasn't good enough at it, didn't get it, didn't do it enough, whatever. That's third world kind of stuff. That's not America. That's not America leading the world. That's why going to the polls on election day, you show up, you show your ID, they know who you are, you're registered, you push the button, and you voted. At the end of the day, we add them up, and we say who won. Now, the concept, obviously, is that, okay, on election day, what if people are working and they can't vote? Okay, that's realistic. I worked shift work, right? I made it a point to get to the poll. So I got up early on a day I was working in the afternoon, and I made sure I got to the poll. When I worked a midnight shift, I made sure I stayed up an extra hour, and I went and voted. Or I got out of bed in the middle of the day, and I went and voted, because it's important, right? It's a responsibility as a citizen. So there are ways that people can do, they can't get to the poll. Maybe they don't have a car, so they have to be able to mail something in. No, you can get a ride. You can ask a friend for a ride. You can take a taxi cab. You can find some other way to get to the poll on election day. That would cut out a lot of this nonsense. I understand the argument that you want to make sure you get every single vote. And I agree. Every American citizen that legitimately is allowed to vote should be able to vote. And whichever way the election goes, that's the way the election went. I'm good with that 100%. Might not even come out the way I want it to. But if it was fair and square, then that's legitimate. All this other stuff that, the way I see it, that is packaged under, you know, making sure everyone gets to vote is really a disguise for let's loosen it up so that there can be cheating. And as we're seeing now with all these elections, these recounts that are still going on in lots of places. Well, my friends, we've come to the end of another episode. I love being here with you. Every weekday. Remember, healthy cell. Take a look at it, and in the meantime, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. This is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice signing off here on the America Outbound Radio Network.